Hi, welcome to the brand new Clinical Scientist podcast. I'm Emma Rees, a co-founder of The Clinical Scientist. I'm an academic clinical scientist at Swansea University and I specialise in ECHO. The aim of this podcast is to bring leading clinical scientists closer to you, wherever you're listening. We'll explore topics such as advanced practice, scientific leadership and clinical research. We'd like to start with a short series of interviews which discuss one of the routes to the consultant grade. That's the HSST, or Higher Specialist Scientific Training Programme. In these interviews, we'll chat to HSST trainees in a variety of disciplines. We'll explore their motivation for applying to their programme. We'll talk about the best and the most challenging elements. And we'll also ask them what advice they'd give to a prospective applicant. In this episode, you'll hear from George Burgle, clinical scientist in genomics at the Manchester Centre for Genomic Medicine, and from Joe McCullough, a clinical scientist in blood transfusion at the Royal Bolton Hospital.
So my name is George Burgle. I am a clinical scientist in genomics, and I work at the Manchester Centre for Genomic Medicine.
Great. And where are you in your HSST pathway at the moment?
So I was recruited in the first year of HSST, so I'm in the final year of my HSST.
Excellent. Excellent. So the end is in sight. Yeah, good stuff. And Josephine?
Hi, my name's Jo McCullough. I am a clinical scientist in blood transfusion and I'm currently working at the Royal Bolton Hospital.
Okay, and where are you in HSST at the moment?
Currently in my third year.
So perhaps you could start by each telling me something about what motivated you to do this. You know, it's 5 years of study, it's a long time. You've already done quite a lot of training and exams and clinical experiences to get to the grade you're at. So what's the motivation for doing HSST, Jo?
Well, I did the STP training programme and part of me thinks maybe I'm a bit institutionalised in the fact that once I've stopped doing a period of study, I get a little bit like itchy feet to want to do something else. So I think that might have been sort of one of the reasons, but and it was also sort of like a natural progression step after STP to do HSST. But also in the area that I work, without doing something like this, the only sort of way to progress is via management. And that really isn't something that I was interested in at all. And so this really appealed to me.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the case for a lot of people, isn't it? Is, you know, the need to develop in your career as a scientist, not as a manager. And in the past, for lots of us in different disciplines, the managerial route or moving into academia, that those are the only options that have been available. So this is a fantastic opportunity, isn't it? George, was it the same for you?
So actually, it's a combination of things. I think some of it might be different. So before doing the HSST, I did the STP route. Before that, I was doing a PhD. So when I went into the STP, I wanted to combine some research and some of the clinical training. So I did apply for my STP project. I did apply for visiting fellowship at the university to do the project. Then HSST came up as a really good opportunity to keep some of the research element going by getting formal route into it, formal funding, doing work with the university. So that was really good opportunity to do. So through the Declan Sci aspect of it. And also the actual management training was really useful. So the bits that we do with the Manchester Business School, it's because eventually if you progress in science, you have to take up managerial roles, managerial responsibilities, and getting some of that formal training with the Manchester Business School was really helpful. So both of these things, and I think, like Joe said, I itch if I'm not doing exams, so I like to do that as well.
Excellent. And A couple of people through Twitter have wondered if there is an automatic route to consultant post for you where you work personally, or whether you are doing this so that you would be eligible to apply for a consultant post if one came available. How are things in your department with regards that? You know, are there already people at consultant grade, or is there a desire by your line manager to create a new post when you finish?
So there is no automatic post, but I think being on the HSST and doing the extra things that we do and getting the further exposure has already helped me in progressing. So when I started the HSST, I was a band 7, then I went into a band 8A and then a band 8B. So it's kind of building that progression through the role. Hopefully I will be aspiring for a consultant role. There are quite few in our department. We are the Northwest Genomic Laboratory Hub. I don't know if you know about the structure in genomics, but we have a big department. So we have quite few consultant clinical scientists. I've not got to the stage yet to discuss the options when I finish. But I think it's certainly giving us all the qualifications and the finishing the exams, the fellowships and all of that to be able to apply for a consultant role when they become available.
Yeah, and I guess what's encouraging there is that you have consultant clinical scientists where you work, so you know that those are valuable posts. They're something that your employer really wants to have, and the fact that you've seen progression through grades towards that role, you know, that gives you, I guess, that optimism that yes, you know, there's a reason why I'm doing this, it's going to make a difference. What about for you, Jo?
With regards to consultant clinical scientist roles, there are some in biochemistry, and I think historically there's always been that sort of progression within the biochemistry field, but within blood transfusion I'm the only clinical scientist currently working at the hospital, so it's difficult to say, but I think there's potential, but also I think, as George said, it's that potential at the end that you can be eligible to apply for those posts, and it's the skill set that you gain from this training that sort of sets you up for the future.
Yeah, I've no doubt that the programme will help you be a better clinical scientist, won't it, anyway? And then, as you say, you have that piece of paper that if a post comes available, you know you're eligible for it. And also there is a sense of, you know, you are the pioneers in a lot of disciplines, and, you know, we have to push and push for these new posts to become available, and that the more people do HSST, hopefully the more there is that push for posts like this to be generated in the NHS, which would be fantastic. Can we talk a little bit about what it was like applying? So, you know, the application process, the selection process, the interview process, what could people expect if they were to apply now? Jo, would you like to start with that?
So I was one of the sort of, I think they're called a direct applicant. So I was put forward by my organisation, which is sort of really good, because to have that support behind you to be nominated to do it was absolutely fantastic. With regards to the application, so it's, I think it was four sort of essay style questions that you had to answer about yourself and certain things that you've done throughout your sort of training so far. And then the interview was sort of like sort of different panels. You had different sort of, there was scientific, there was generic interviews, and they were all set in different rooms. So a bit weird and a little bit different to what an ordinary interview would be. But yeah, I don't think the interview process for me was unusual, and I didn't find it that difficult, because I'd done the STP interviews and I thought they were strange at the time. But having come back and done the HSST interviews, I thought they were, it just felt like normal.
Okay, great. George?
It's been a while since I applied, but it seems like many of it still stands true from what Joe said. I think the application process wasn't foreign for me, because I did the STP. I also interview for the STP and do that. So I was kind of familiar with the process, but yes, you have to answer a few questions. At the time, we had to do a presentation during the interview process, but that was, like I said, a few years ago. So I think if people are coming through the STP route, which I suspect more and more people are coming through it, then they will be familiar with the process. It will not be something different for them. If people have come from traditional A-grade training, then it will be a different experience. But again, I assume for many, they are exposed to STPs. They will hear about it. But if they haven't, getting into their mind that way of interview will be really important. So there's a lot of it available, a lot of information about it available from the national school and other places. So it's worth preparing for that style, because it's very different from a personal style interview where you just sit on yourself with a panel.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think a lot of people would be thrown by going into different rooms with people from outside of their profession, perhaps, and the nature of more generic questions. You know, you get into your own specialist bubble in work when you've been there a while, don't you? So I think that's a really good tip. Thank you. And it sounds like the process hasn't changed very much. So that's useful to know. So having a look at the website, the National School website, it looks like there's an expectation that the course will take 5 years, and that much of the taught component is in the first 3 years, and much of the research component usually is left for the last 2 years. Obviously, things have been a bit difficult at the moment because of COVID, and I imagine that's delayed everybody. Do you know, though, if 5 years is what it's taking people? There are some concerns, I think, from people that it's hard to achieve it in 5 years.
So I went into it almost fresh. So after the STP, I was only in a standard clinical scientist role for less than a year when I got into the HSST. So I've not sat any of the Royal College exams. I've not done anything extra. So I went in fresh in the first take, and there was lots of issues to start with, especially for the specialties like life sciences, where you require Royal of College exams, where basically on two different occasions I had exams set by the school on the day of a Royal College exam, or the day after, or the day before. And it all changed, and the structure of the course have adapted to allow that you have these set times for Royal College exams, and these are the academic modules that you have to sit and do. And so a lot of this has been ironed out, and the system is flowing much better from I don't know if Joe will agree or not, but basically I think they have divided these requirements in a much better way. From my experience, I was coming to an end at the right time. I'm the health and safety lead at my division, so I dropped everything during COVID-19, and most of what I've been doing recently was health and safety, and that's why I had to delay. But I was set to finish on time. And I know the same for many other people. Some people actually did well with COVID-19, where in their roles did not have any distractions, so they had less work to do. So they actually finished, written their thesis and submitted everything before time because of COVID-19. And I know many people will be asking that from not only a professional point of view, but personal point of view. So, you know, you have family life, most people are not at the early stage of their life as well as career as an STP. So I think even with family, that's possible. I had three children during my HSST time. And I think it is a very time consuming, and it requires a lot of input from people at work and at home, but I think it is possible to finish in 5 years.
Excellent. And obviously I ask that as well, because from a PhD point of view, which is my background, lots of people go over. And I think partly that's because 5 years is a long time and life happens in 5 years, doesn't it? A lot of life happens. And so, you know, you can expect people to need sort of extensions for various things, but it's really reassuring to hear your experiences, George. Joe, what about you? What's your experience?
So for me so far, I feel like I'm on track to complete in 5 years. A bit sort of eager for me to say that, because I'm only in the third year, but it feels like I am on the right trajectory to finish. From colleagues in the same discipline as me, I have known that early on, because transfusion was a new HST sort of area, they hadn't actually written the Royal College exams. They'd never had any. So I think that was initially a delay in sort of people getting that exam first. So the people who started in the first cohort. But I think, yeah, depending on personal circumstances, if you do require that extension, it is given. It's not a, this is it, 5 years and then you're out. I think they are trying to encourage people to complete, but I suppose you do have to put a time limit on it, otherwise you could continue doing this for for years.
Yeah. And obviously the university will have regulations on the maximum time you can take to get the academic qualification, but they'll have processes for coping with maternity leave and things, won't they? So, you know, all of that will be in hand.
So I agree with Joe. Both the school and the university were very, from the start, for example, of COVID-19, schools sent emails saying, we know that during HSSTs, people are not supernumerary. Some people are taking senior roles, and we know that you might be redirected or your responsibilities go in different directions during COVID-19. And like I said, because I work in the cancer team and our work is the urgent cancer work and the health and safety, they were very happy to put a pause and delay my time. So they're very understanding and helpful in that way.
Excellent. What are the best bits been of doing HSST so far? What are the bits that you've enjoyed the most?
I really enjoyed the Manchester Business School time. The lecturers are fantastic. The content is mostly really interesting. It makes you think outside the data and the numbers and the way we scientists, well, we are very heavily evidence-based, and we need that. But you get a different perspective when you're in the Manchester Business School. They will argue that they are evidence-based, but I think we will differ on the way we define evidence. But yeah, I did enjoy that, and I'm enjoying the research that I'm doing.
Yeah, I think it is interesting, isn't it? Having that fresh perspective of somebody completely outside of your discipline can sometimes challenge our own perceptions, but also help us understand what our strengths are, potentially. Yeah. I can see that how that would be enjoyable, but perhaps you were a little disruptive as well.
Yeah.
Joe, what about for you? What's been the best bit?
I think the best bit for me is the involvement in research and, yeah, involved in quite a lot of different research projects that I think, had I not been on the training, maybe those doors wouldn't have necessarily been opened to me. Another element has been working across different organisations. Because I'm in transfusion, we have NHS Blood and Transplant, who are our sort of transfusion specialists in the country. And so I've had the opportunity to work very closely with them as well. So not just within my own organisation, but also across different organisations. And that's been, really good.
Excellent. That sounds really interesting. Are there any bits that you think, oh gosh, this was really, really hard. This was really, really difficult. And you know, you weren't expecting it.
The leadership and management. Not that they're necessarily hard, because I don't think they are. And I think they are an eye-opener, and they do give you a different way to think. But I think maybe it's the way that I've done them. But I feel like everything was happening all at once. I was doing my part one exam. I was preparing my research proposal, and I was also having these modules, and it felt as though I couldn't enjoy them, and they were actually quite difficult to get those essays written and done and do the reading outside because of the time pressures. So actually those modules have become a little bit of a something that I almost dread, which is horrible to say, because I think if I'd done them separately, I would have really enjoyed them and gained quite a lot from them. But because they are very different, it almost seems a little bit of a burden that I'm having to take time away from my area of speciality to then sort of concentrate on this, when actually I don't feel like I have the time. So that's what I've found difficult.
Yeah. And I think it's true to say, for many of us, when we're learning something that is outside of our discipline, it's hard to find the headspace for it when you're really overburdened with other stuff, because it takes so much more thinking time, doesn't it, to approach things from a very different view. So I can entirely understand what you're saying, that if you'd done them separately, you might well have been able to really get into it. But actually, in the mix with everything else, you found it quite challenging. So that's interesting. And is that the route that most people would study these modules, Jo, what you've done, you know, in the mix with all of the other bits and pieces? Or is there an opportunity for them to sit those leadership and management elements at a different time?
So I think there's two routes. I think life sciences, they try to get you to spread them over 3 or 4 years, and the other routes, because of your part one and part two exams. And then the other route is to do them all within the first 2 years. And so with life sciences, I spread them out, and I think the way my exams landed, I probably would have been better grouping them all. Yeah, it just made it like almost, I felt as though there was 3 things going on all at once, and I just didn't have the brain space to be able to.
No. So a discrete period of learning, focused learning just on that, might have perhaps worked a bit better for you, I guess. Yeah. George, what about you? What's been the bit that's been the most difficult?
I think, again, certain timings, I know you don't want us to focus on that, but certain timings of everything happening at the same time. So you have exams, you have Manchester Business School. I assume that was completely sorted. So maybe not from your experience, but again, I was revising for exams and writing essays at the same time. Like I said, literally some of them falling on the same day, and I had to then, and although the school is helpful, was helpful in terms of rescheduling their parts, it was still, you had to contact people about that, you had to organize it. So that part was difficult. And I personally found it difficult during COVID-19. So again, people need to be prepared that when life happens, you just need to be prepared to accept delays, accept changes. I was all set to finish this year, and I was on track to do that. And the fact that I can't, I found it very difficult. And again, during 5 years program, people need to expect that life does happen. And sometimes life happens on a personal level or on a work, in the workplace, and you need to be prepared to deal with that and deal with the disruptions that might bring on.
Yeah. And I guess then it's fair to say, when you experience these difficulties with the program, like in scheduling of things, it's really important that you feel like you've got an active voice in going back to the university and the national school to give that feedback. I'm guessing they have sort of student panels and boards and that sort of thing that you can give that feedback into. But it's important that you feel like you have a voice and that something's getting done, isn't it? You talked a little bit about the workload there. Can you give any sense of how much time in a week you would need to spend typically on the work for the program? Or is it so variable over the course of the year that's really, you know, there isn't a fixed amount per week? I'm asking because I know people will be thinking, okay, if I've got to try and schedule this, how am I going to manage it?
Things changed a lot. So during the beginning, I was writing essays at weekends and everyone who sits the Royal College exams know that they have to revise outside all the time, anytime your life stops and you're just revising for exams. So added to that, writing essays for the university does take time, then writing your research proposal, etc. So the protected time is very valuable. But I personally, I was the representative for the life sciences across the few years the past. You don't have enough time by having one day protected time to do it. So my general personal advice, and again, it'll be interesting to see if Joe agrees, if someone tells you that if you get one day protected time, you'll get it all done in that time, it's not enough. You will have to be prepared to give your own personal time. So you really need to engage in the program and really want to do it, because you have to give a lot of your own time for it.
Joe, would you agree with that?
It's more a case of when there's something that's happened, like an exam or the essays, you tend to sort of spend evenings, weekends, dedicating your time to do it. And then you might just not do anything for a week or something to have a break. So there's no set time. It's all about what's happening, where your deadlines lie. And it's about being flexible. But like George said, you have to give up quite a lot of your own time. So there is a lot of dedication involved in completing.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah. And this, the sense of achievement now as you're getting closer to the end, George, you know, it must be really, really good. And I'm guessing, like with most universities, you know ahead of time when your assignments and your exams are going to be due. So you can try and plan for periods of work and when they're going to be. Is that true? Do you know well in advance when things are?
Some of it is, yeah, and you have a rough idea of when things are going to happen, but I've often found that it's quite difficult to sort of plan things around those times necessarily, because things change. Your workload at work as well can change, and that has a huge influence on you know how you spend your time, and just sometimes you're just tired and fed up and you just think, you know, I'm not doing anything this week. And so that sort of takes you out of kilter a little bit, but
so having a really supportive family network or friend network around you is for those times when you lose your motivation or your energy or because you need a break, you know, that's obviously going to be really important. Were your expectations different than the reality?
Well, that might sound like a cheesy answer. Actually, the reality was slightly better than what I expected. I expected that it will be a slightly bigger STP, and it is much better than a slightly bigger STP. I think it's a very exciting program for scientists. I think it's going to change the way scientists are trained. Many people were, I'm a big fan of the modernizing scientific careers, just to put that out there. I think the STP was a success, and I think it proved that in the workforce, because many people were doubtful of it, saying all sorts of things. So I think the STP proved itself, and I think the HST is proving itself already and will do. I think it was a very exciting program, and I definitely would advise anyone, if they do have the ability to dedicate the time, it's going to help you a lot during your career.
Joe, for you, expectations and reality, how do they compare?
A bit better than what I expected, actually. And I think, I know for life sciences, doing the part one and part two exams, you don't often get the opportunity to do that outside of for where I'm working anyway, to do those exams outside of this training, and to actually have completed the first part of the exam, the way you feel after that is absolutely amazing. So yeah, I could never have expected to feel that way.
So it's given you confidence, I guess, which you're going to need, that professional confidence when you're working at consultant grade. You know, having an examination that's comparable to a medical qualification will make you feel, all right, yeah, I can do this. I know my stuff, I guess, is that's what it's helping you feel. And it's good to hear that there's flexibility in the portfolio and in the training, because you know, the need to be able to develop your own job plan and to have that control over your training and your development, that the consultant grade is going to be really, really important, isn't it? So it's nice to hear that that's there. From an external point of view, I think this is incredible. You know, this is such an amazing experience for our professions. I've been working in cardiology for 26 years now, and you know, never before have we had such clear routes to consultant scientist level grades. And the fact that it's opened the door for so many people, I think, is absolutely amazing. So I'm a big fan of modernizing scientific careers too. Yes, there have been teeth and troubles, and yes, it hasn't all been plain sailing, but I think we are getting there, definitely. So just wrapping up then, is there any advice that you would like to give somebody considering an application who's not quite sure whether they should go for it or not?
I think the really important thing is to love what you do, which I hope for many scientists that's the case, to be passionate about what you do, and to be willing to spend the time and the energy. And across the years, I know one of the popular questions that we kept getting, oh, well, if you have a PhD, what do you do? And I know from my experience and other people's experience, it's just another opportunity structured in a way to give you the chance to do more research, to get the time, the opportunity, and the doors opening to do that research. So even if you have a PhD, it's very different. The Declan Sci is a different program. So it's just the willingness to give the time and to expect that you might have lots of issues along the way. But if you have the energy and the passion, go for it.
So certainly then what seems to be coming across is that there is a need to be able to cope with change, and to be able to problem solve and to think on your feet, and to be fairly, I know resilient is a word we overuse in the NHS, but there is a need to be able to, you know, cope with the troughs, isn't there, with the lows as well as the highs, and to keep your sights set on that goal. And Jo, what advice would you give to somebody considering an application?
Similar to George, that if you've got the passion and you absolutely love your job, and you see that you want to have more of a clinical or an academic role within the hospital environment, then it's the ideal sort of pathway. And if you like structured pathways as well, I think some people don't, they like to do it in a different way, but it is structured in a way that you can see the end and you do feel like you are progressing. So if that's something that you're interested in, and you have the energy and the passion to complete it, then yeah, do it. It's a fantastic opportunity.
Yeah. And I think as well, what you were saying earlier, George, about the comparison with PhD, and if you've done a PhD, I know somebody put that on Twitter this morning, actually, they'd done a PhD, but it was in a different field. And I think what's clear from speaking with you both is that, yeah, you know, a PhD, you know, which I've done, obviously, is really good preparation for research. If you want to be a researcher, a PhD, I think, is a good way to go. But in terms of leading a clinical service, you need more than research skills. And so the specialist scientific training that you're getting during your HSST, and the business, the leadership, the management component, wrapping everything together to make you able to be the scientific leader in a service, isn't it? Which is different from a PhD. So I can see the benefit of, if someone's got a PhD doing HSST, potentially if they want a role as a service leader.
Can I just add to that? You have the option to do the management, so the modules A. You have all sorts of different formats that you can do that. So you don't have to do the Declan Sci fully. But my advice would be, if you do have the capacity, go for the full Declan Sci, because it's not added to all the things that advantages that you said. Actually, from my experience doing my PhD before my STP training, and then doing research post STP training, you approach things in a slightly different way to do a research that will benefit things in the clinic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Clinical Scientist Podcast. We hope you found it informative and inspiring. If you've got any questions, or you'd like to make some comments or send us some feedback, you can find us on Twitter @theclinsci. or through our website, which is theclinsci.com.